Thanks to our dynamic trio here for setting up the story for us. I'd like to ask you a few questions, and these don't demand an answer, but they will probably prompt some thought for you. How do you respond when something offends you? What's your natural response? Do you just ignore the offense? Do you attack the offender? Do you just shut down communication in that situation? How do you respond when you're offended? Here's another question. How would Jesus have you respond when you're offended? How does what you think Jesus might want, desire, expect of you compare to how you respond? And this is maybe the hardest question of all. What about when Jesus is the offender? What then? Pastor Matt Stephen has challenged our view of what it takes to respond to offense. He points this out. An accurate view of ourselves is indispensable for spiritual maturity. If you want to grow spiritually, a great place to start is to simply ask, do I see myself accurately? As followers of Jesus, we want to allow Jesus to help us get a more accurate view of ourselves, even when that is really, really painful. But we have to be open to the idea that Jesus might want to, have to offend us if he's going to help us grow. Researchers have looked into what is it that causes offense in people. What causes that feeling, that sensation of offense? And what they have found is that there's a specific set of psychological circumstances that lead to offense. Specifically, it's most likely going to happen. You will most likely get offended when someone challenges your self-image. So the way that you view yourself, the way you think about yourself, if someone challenges that, questions that, that is going to cause offense. And yet, Stephen suggests that that's the very thing that Jesus wants to do sometimes. Challenge the way we view ourselves so that we can see ourselves correctly, so that we can grow. Well, the Good Samaritan parable had immense potential for greatly offending Jesus' first century audience. And as we've worked our way through it over these last weeks, I wonder if maybe the parable has challenged your own self-image, if maybe it's caused you to look at yourself, to look at how you respond to the needs around you differently. We're in the final week of this series where we're trying to learn from this story that Jesus tells, learn from the Samaritan especially, how to go and do likewise. So we looked a couple weeks ago at the context of the parable, this conversation between an expert in the Jewish law and Jesus around the question of who do I view as my neighbor? The one that I have to love if I follow the command to love your neighbor. Who is that? How do I identify the person? And we look at the first half of the parable with a priest and a Levite passing by on this road of devastating destruction and death, right? We saw them pass by, and we talked about what is it that might have motivated them to pass by? What is it that motivates us to not respond with compassion, but what motivates us to actually respond with compassion in the moment? And this morning, on this final Sunday of the series, we come to the Samaritan himself. We hear the story today, and the Good Samaritan has inspired all kinds of, you know, names for hospitals and counseling centers. I mean, we see it as a very positive, inspirational kind of thing. But in context, the idea of a Good Samaritan in this story was offensive to Jesus' audience, was scandalous, was provocative. And so I hope that we can maybe experience a little bit of what they would have thought, felt, and processed as that audience then heard the story. So at the crux of the matter is this subject of compassion. What keeps us from showing compassion? What motivates us to show compassion? And I think it's fair to say that we all of us hearing these words in this room online, we all want to show compassion to people. We want to help others. We want to make a difference. We want to show care. We want to love with actions, not just with words. We want to do that. But we want to do it with limits, don't we? If we're honest with ourselves, we want to do it with limits. There are certain people that we want to help, but maybe not others. We want to do it on our timetable, when it suits our schedules. And we only want to go so far. I mean, we only want to do so much. We want to give, you know, this amount and no more. We want to show compassion, but we want to do it with limits. And yet, this parable, this example for us, has a way of exploding the limits that we might place on our compassion. So let's dive into this story. So we find in the parable this pattern of three. And it's a familiar pattern. So I imagine you've all heard jokes already that follow the pattern of three. You know, there's a rabbi, a priest, and a monk. There's a doctor, a lawyer, and an accountant. There's a brunette, and a blonde, and a redhead. I mean, you've probably heard those stories, and we can see that in various places, not just with jokes. I mean, you can look at folk tales, and you can read about the three little pigs. You can read about Goldilocks and the three bears, about the three billy goats Gruff. And what we see is that the first two set up a pattern, and the third one breaks the pattern in some way. The third one is the contrast for the punchline. Well, in Jesus' day, there was also a story of three in Jewish audiences, and it was typically a priest, sounds familiar, and a Levite, that sounds familiar too, and the third would have been an ordinary Israelite, a Jewish commoner. And in the story, the priest and the Levite would have been the bad ones, and you know, would have done things wrongly, poorly, not the way they should be done. And then in comes, you know, not the high and mighty temple workers, but the everyday, you know, Joe the plumber Jewish guy who comes in and he does it right. Now, that's the kind of story that Jesus sets up. That's the kind of story that the audience would have been expecting. So they hear the priest, they hear the Levite, and here comes Jewish everyman to do it right. And instead, it's a Samaritan. And Jesus crosses every line of decency and good taste in that audience as he introduces the Samaritan. So a little backstory between Jews and Samaritans. They were sworn enemies of each other. And you heard in the drama this morning, the Jews would have viewed Samaritans as unclean. Went back hundreds of years when the Assyrians conquered the northern part of Israel. And they intermarried with the Jews that remained. And so you have these people that were half Jew, half Gentile, the mudbloods for you Harry Potter fans. I mean, they're the half-breeds. And that's how the Jewish people viewed them. But the hostility went the other way too. I mean, the Samaritans viewed themselves as the true people of God because, you know, the Jews, they were from the tribe of Judah, but the Samaritans were from the tribes of Joseph, who was the favorite son of their patriarch going all the way back, the patriarch Israel. And so the Samaritans viewed themselves as the true heirs of Israel. And so they would rob caravans on their way of Jews on their way to Jerusalem. They even desecrated the temple by on the Passover Eve, catapulting pigs into the temple courts, kind of a la Monty Python, you know, desecrating the temple. So there's this racial hatred and violence going over centuries. And so you can imagine with that backstory how this Jewish audience now hears this story that Jesus tells where the Samaritan is the hero. The animosity was so great that when Jesus gets to the end and he says, who was the neighbor to the man who was robbed? You know, the expert in the law can't even bring himself to say Samaritan. It was just the one who had mercy. You know, if the famous theologian Taylor Swift was telling it, I mean, she would say there's no rooting for the anti-hero here. I tried to think, what would the present day equivalent be if we were to tell the story of the Good Samaritan today and we wanted to capture the same sense of shock and repulsion, the same kind of emotional punch that the story carries, who would it be? Well, back in the 80s, a theater company told the parable of the good punk rocker. Maybe that works. I'm not sure that even, at least not today, captures the same sense. How about the good terrorist? How about the good abuser? The good abortionist? The good racist? The good politician? The good liberal? The good Republican? Do any of those, if you hear them paired together, do they just sort of, you know, sink into your stomach? If you feel any kind of emotional rise when you hear that, then you're beginning to understand how this audience would have heard this parable. There's no such thing as a good Samaritan, according to this audience. The Samaritan might call into question our self-image, in addition to that first century audience's, and challenge the limits that we might place on our compassion. So let's talk about those limits for a few minutes. The first question that we might ask is when it comes to compassion, who are the people that we show compassion to? To whom do we show compassion? Who are the recipients? Well, naturally speaking, we like to help people that we like, don't we? I mean, if you like a person, you want to help them. Or if a person is like you, you and I will naturally want to help them. It's easier for us to sympathize if we can relate to them, if we have things in common, then it's easier for us to sympathize when they are in trouble and to want to help. Well, the Samaritan who shows compassion to this Jewish man had none of those things going for him. Little in common, a social wall between them, the kind of hostility that I've described. The Samaritan has every reason to think that this man on the road deserves his suffering. I mean, he could think to himself, you know, that's what happens when you think that you and your people are better than everybody else. And yet he takes pity on this man who, if roles were reversed, would have had no reason to take pity on him. So if we were to look in the Samaritan's field guide to compassion, if the Samaritan were going to teach us how to have compassion, what might he say about the person to whom we show that compassion? Well, I think he would say, we show compassion to anyone, even the one who's getting what they deserve. We show compassion to anyone, even to and including the one who we think is getting what they deserved. The one who has wronged you. The one who has acted irresponsibly. The one who's broken the law. The one who is where they are because of their mistake, their failure, and they deserve it. The one who has been unethical, unkind. The one who is unlikable. The backstabbing former friend. The ex-husband. the ex-wife, ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, ex-whoever. The unscrupulous boss, the mean coworker, the bullying classmate, the one whose political opinions seem to be different than yours, opposite of yours on every issue that you care about. The addict, the immigrant who's in the community through questionable means. Who is it that you think doesn't deserve your compassion? Samaritan would say that's the very one that you need to show your compassion to. Now, what about fill in the blank? And what about this? And what about that? I know those questions. What about this situation, that situation? Is there an exception here? What about it? And I don't have all the answers. And I, even if I did, couldn't take the time to give them all to you this morning. But we have to wrestle with what Jesus said. We have to wrestle with what Jesus, through this Samaritan, would say to us. So we want to put a limit on who. And the Samaritan says, probably wherever you would place that limit, that might be the very person that you most need to show compassion to. We also want to put limits on when. When we show compassion. When will we help? Well, maybe when it fits our schedule. When we have nothing better to do. When it's convenient. From, 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays. We want to put limits. What the Samaritan teaches us about the when is it's really whenever there is a need. Whenever there is a need, that's when we help. Now, we don't know what the Samaritan was doing exactly here on this road at this time, if we put ourselves in the story, but certainly we can gather that doing what he did, stopping and helping this man, was not in his plan. I mean, to stop and to treat and to bandage and to transport this wounded man, I mean, that certainly slowed down his progress wherever he was going, whatever he was doing. And then he shows up at this inn in a town, because, there weren't inns in the wilderness, so he's probably continued on to Jericho. If you can imagine kind of an old Western story and a Native American riding into Dodge City with an injured cowboy on his horse. Probably not going to go over well with the locals. I mean, really, what the Samaritan should do here, rather than riding into a Jewish settlement with this injured Jew, he should probably just unload the man at the edge of town. I mean, he's done at least that much, gotten him close to civilization, unload and disappear for his own safety. Instead, he rides into town, books an inn for the night, and I'm sure it wasn't a very restful night as he continued to care for this man. What plans or appointments of the Samaritans got derailed by his compassion? We help when there's a need, as long as it takes. That's what Jesus would say to us, go and do likewise. There's the when question. This past week, I was driving somewhere and was stopped at an intersection, and across the way, on the other side of the intersection, I saw a vehicle stopped in the left turn lane, and there wasn't much traffic, so it wasn't even really causing a problem, but there was a vehicle stopped in the left lane, and again, I'm seeing this across the road, but there was a person with their back to me standing on the median strip, looked like they would have been holding a sign, so I'm assuming probably someone who was homeless. And this car had stopped and was talking to the person. Now, this is conjecture. I have no idea what was happening. I mean, I suppose the person could have stopped to give the homeless person a piece of their mind. I don't know. But more likely, I think, there was some kind of compassion expressed there, some kind of concern. And this was just a moment. I don't know what happened beyond. But I was reminded not to ignore small investments of compassion, which we might ignore those because we think there's so much big need out there. You know, even just the act of listening to this person imparts some dignity to them on the roadside. When? Well, maybe even when you're sitting in the left turn lane at an intersection. Then there's the question of how much. How much are we expected to give? I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we could kind of put a number to it? Like, how much, when we want to show compassion to someone, how much, how far should we go? Well, we see the Samaritan here using all of his available resources, oil and wine and cloth and his animal. And then he goes into town, and now he's shelling out money. And not only, you know, is he shelling out money on the front end, but he's saying, I'll come back and pay any extra, which, with the kind of reputation that innkeepers had in that day, was probably pretty important. I mean, an innkeeper was not the most reputable of people, and so if this injured man incurred debt while he stayed there, the innkeeper could have sold him into slavery. And then all of the Samaritan's efforts would have been for nothing. And so the Samaritan says, here's kind of a down payment, and I'll come back and settle accounts later. I mean, essentially, here is a blank check. And I promise you it's not going to bounce. How much do we give? Well, a wiser voice than me in C.S. Lewis says this: I do not believe one can settle how much we ought to give. Well, thanks, Mr. Lewis. That's helpful. I don't believe we can settle how much we ought to give. I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. In other words, if our expenditure on comforts, luxuries, amusements, etc., is up to the standard common among those with the same income as our own, we are probably giving away too little. If our charities do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say they are too small. There ought to be things we would like to do and cannot do because our charitable expenditure excludes them. Now, Lewis is talking there, it seems pretty specifically about money, but I think we could extend that to, you know, the time and energy we have. If we're never feeling the pinch, if we're never having to say no to ourselves in order to help someone else, then it would be fair to ask the question, is it really compassion? That quote from Lewis would concur with Paul's assessment as he's giving his concluding instructions to the Galatians. He says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. So to the question of how much do we need to do to show compassion to someone else? I mean, really, the answer that Paul and Jesus and the Samaritan would give us is that, you know, how much is until you share the other person's burden. Until you feel the burden, at least a portion of the burden that the other person feels. And we can see that the Samaritan felt the burden in the story. I mean, the injured man lost all of his money. And the Samaritan is pledging an unknown amount of his money to help. The man's life was at risk. And now the Samaritan's life. I mean, he's staying in a Jewish inn in a Jewish community overnight. I mean, could he wake up to sort of, you know, pay his bill and depart and find an angry mob outside ready to enact community vengeance for this Jewish brother of theirs? How about you? Do you ever feel the burden of those you're helping? I mean, there are plenty of ways that we can help that are kind of clean, prepackaged, sanitized, the kinds of things that don't really impact the giver at all, that keep us far removed from those that we are helping. And we can give in a moment from afar and then move on with our lives and not really think about it again. Now, the message here is not to stop doing those things. I mean, let's keep doing those things too. The question is that enough? Is it enough to just give from afar? So, how does all of that feel? You inspired now? Let's go and do likewise. And I fully recognize that it is so much easier to preach all of this than it is to actually do it. T.W. Manson, an English Bible professor, says that question, who is my neighbor, at the end of the day is unanswerable. He says the point of the parable is that if a man has love in his heart, if a woman has love in her heart, it will tell him, it will tell her who their neighbor is. And then they can go and do likewise. You know, God is not after rule followers who can clearly define and pre-plan exactly what they will do in every circumstance. He wants people who will love like him, who will respond like Jesus. And rules and laws and field guides aren't going to produce that kind of person. So what can it actually enable us to go and do likewise? I mean, certainly, shoulds are not enough. You should be generous. You should be compassionate. You shouldn't be selfish. You shouldn't be a racist. You should, you shouldn't. I mean, the priest and the Levite were good should people. Should will eventually encounter a situation that is outside of the box. Should will eventually run out of steam to keep doing good. What could keep us going? I would say the biggest thing is the radical enemy love that's shown to us. This parable is the story of you. This parable is the story of me. What if you're on the side of the road and you're bleeding to death and your only hope for survival and recovery is an extreme act of compassion by someone who you thought was your enemy? What would you be thinking and feeling after that person helped you? I mean, after you were rescued from the situation and you're healing and you're processing and you realize that this enemy has shown you compassion. I mean, how do you process that? How do you make sense of that? Can it not change your life in some way? Well, it has happened. And it has changed individuals and it has changed the world. Because you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Yes, God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. For if while we were God's enemies, and we were, if when we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life? For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. This isn't a new rule. It's a new reality of radical grace and mercy shown to us by God, who had every right to pass us by on our own Jericho road. And when we've experienced that enemy love and grace, when we have been amazed by it, and when we continue to be touched and amazed by it through the presence of the Spirit of Jesus in us, The grateful joy we feel will be fuel that will propel us toward becoming compassionate people. Not perfect, still people full of questions and doubts and things to figure out, but compassionate people. You know, that more than anything marked the early church and fueled the growth of the early church was the compassion that they showed to anybody. That they didn't limit it, but they would show it to the unlikeliest recipients at the unlikeliest times and unbelievable ways. May we be challenged, may we be inspired to learn from Jesus and from them so that we can go and do likewise. Would you pray with me? Oh Lord, again and again as I preach this parable, I feel the weight of not wanting to heap lots of weight on our shoulders. And I realize that that phrase, go and do likewise, could put all kinds of burdens on us that would feel defeating, that would actually stop us from being able to do it. And so I pray that by the power of your Spirit and the presence of your Spirit in us, that we would hear this call to be reminded, to discover or rediscover the immensity of the love and grace you have shown us. And may that move us to lives of compassion that don't limit the who or the when or the how much, but are willing to look at every situation and give what we have in that moment. Impress on us again the immensity of your grace and mercy, Jesus, that it would fuel our joy and our compassion. Amen.